You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. I am your guest host, Christina Long, filling in for Matt Jones. Today on the show, Anthony Christensen will join us on the phone to break down Arkansas basketball's win last night over Queens. And then Ethan Westerman will join me in the studio to talk a little bit of the latest Razorback football news and a couple of transfer portal and other national topics. But first, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. We're joined now over the phone by Anthony Christensen, who is on his way home for the holidays, heading back to St. Louis for Christmas. But he was at last night's game against Queens, Arkansas's 108-80 win over Queens at Bud Walton Arena last night. Anthony, I got to watch the end of this game. I was tied up and didn't get to see the beginning, but I, you know, read everything that we have over on the site at wholehogsports.com. And, you know, obviously a high-scoring game. Arkansas shoots 50% from three. And then they also limit a team in Queens that really emphasizes three-point shooting, and that was something you had written about going into the game. They held them to 6 of 25 from beyond the arc. Just what do you take away from a game like this when Arkansas plays really well on both ends of the floor, but also they're playing Queens? You know, that's kind of the struggle of this time of year in college basketball. Arkansas's non-conference scheduling has been good. We've gotten some high-level matchups for them. But whenever you have these ones sprinkled in against a team like Queens, you know, in between opponents like Texas Tech and Houston coming up, what do you take away from these kinds of games and last night's game specifically?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest takeaway is that they, on both ends of the floor, they were really good on the perimeter. I mean, the shot, I believe, like you said, 50% from three, and on higher volume than they typically shoot. Queens is a poor three-point defensive team, so that was an emphasis area for them going into the game. And then obviously defensively, they guarded the perimeter really well, helped Queens to, I think it was 6 of 24 shooting, which is much below its season average, Queens, and also I believe that's about 5 or 6 shots less than its season average, you know, just for attempts. So I think that's the biggest takeaway, is that, you know, they won the game on the perimeter. But then you look at, you know, inside, you know, defensively, I think Queens got 42 paint points. And, I mean, that's not something that you can probably allow against Houston on Saturday. But, yeah, I think that's probably, I guess, the biggest things. That and, you know, Trevin Brazil had another really nice night. And, you know, I thought Carter Knox had some good moments. Darius Acuff and Trevin Brazil, that 1-2 is really starting to come together and look really good for Arkansas. So I think those are probably the main things that come to mind, for sure.
With Trevin Brazil, I mean, I know it was a big deal for them to get him back, and that was kind of a storyline we were watching this year. Were you expecting him to be this good, or was this kind of, you know, something that you hoped that they could have from him?
I don't know that anybody was expecting him to be this good, or at least as good as he's been in the past couple of games, really, I guess, dating back to the Louisville game. I know he didn't, you know, put up the, you know, same stats that he put up, you know, in some other games in that Fresno State game. But, you know, he's looked the part of an NBA player for, you know, the past couple of weeks, which is what John Calipari had said in the season opener, or after the season opener against Southern. But, you know, you look at, you know, he looks a lot more confident than I think he did last season or the season before. I think that's a big thing. I think he's getting to his spots a lot better, and I think his release has looked a lot quicker. I think, you know, there's a lot of things that you look at that is, I guess, that he's doing that's to his benefit. And you look at, sorry, my dog is pawing me in the back seat.
He loves to do that.
You look at, you just look at all of that, and, you know, you can see, you know, the importance that he has for the team. You could make the argument that he's Arkansas's most important player right now. You know, I would probably say it's Darius Acuff, but Trevin Brazil is right there as well. So, yeah, you know, I'm not sure that I was expecting him to, you know, put up these kinds of numbers, you know, entering the season, but, you know, I think he was always going to be an important piece for them. And I think now you're obviously seeing why.
And his career has been so interesting. I mean, I don't remember, you'll have to correct me on the timeline here, because like we saw him when he was at Mizzou. I can't remember exactly when you got to Mizzou versus when he was there. But I mean, to see the trajectory of his career, how he's kind of had some stops and starts and some high expectations and then some low expectations and just how things have gone for him. It was so interesting this year, kind of wondering what he was going to be. And, you know, obviously he's on a tear right now. I don't expect him to be scoring 26 points like he did last night when, you know, all the time when SEC play starts, but it's been cool to kind of see his trajectory. But what do you remember from like early in his career? Cause I remember when I feel like when he got to Mizzou, and I wasn't doing a ton with basketball at the time, but I feel like when he got to Mizzou, he was a pretty highly regarded guy, wasn't he? Or am I making that up?
You're slightly making it up.
Perfect.
No, so my senior year was Trevin Brazil's freshman year at Mizzou. So I'll be covering Trevin Brazil's start and end to his college career.
That's
so
wild.
I guess I'm Trevin Brazil's biographer at this point. But
perfect.
But no, I mean, he came in as a, you know, a pretty lightly recruited guy. Okay. His recruitment was kind of stunted by COVID and everything. I mean, his primary offers coming out of high school were Mizzou, Montana State, and Cleveland State.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, when Mizzou hired Dennis Gates from Cleveland State, a lot of people thought that, you know, he was going to stay at Mizzou because of that connection. But obviously, he ends up at Arkansas, and, you know, during his freshman season, you could see some of the flashes of this. I mean, he was always a guy who could step out and hit a shot from the perimeter, though I don't remember his numbers necessarily being that great on the perimeter. But, you know, he always had this, you know, this raw athleticism that, you know, you're obviously seeing that come to fruition now. But you could always see that there was a lot of potential there in him. And then, you know, when he hit the portal and, you know, all these different teams were, you know, contacting him, and, you know, he was even getting some very distant NBA shouts at that time. I don't think anybody was really expecting him to go into the draft and, you know, go through all of that, you know, coming off his freshman year, because he was still very wiry, still very raw. And obviously he ends up at Arkansas, and it has been an interesting, you know, path to follow, you know. And obviously now he's playing, you know, especially in this stretch, probably the best he's played in his college career. But yeah, you know, I feel like you could always see the potential there, and now it's, you know, really coming to life, I guess. I don't even remember what the original question was, but
it was just me thinking Trevin Brazil was good from the beginning and highly recruited, and he actually was not. But so I think one thing I thought was cool last night was Nick Pringle was asked about, you know, watching him and kind of watching his growth this year. Nick Pringle, obviously, you know, not on the team last year, but he highlighted the fact that, you know, he was in this league, he came from South Carolina, he had been against Trevin Brazil, and how kind of seeing his growth over the course of his career was really interesting, and how he felt like, you know, and it was funny because it's like he said, you know, if we can get, you know, what was he was what, 5 of 7 last night or whatever it was, and he was saying, you know, mm-hmm. if we can get that from TB every night, that's great. And it's like, yeah, I bet you would love to get 26 points out of a guy every night. But I think his point stands about, you know, the play they've been getting from him, the effort they've been getting from him kind of starting to put it all together in a way that we haven't always seen, is something that really helps them. And like you said, there's a case for him being kind of their most important guy. But mm-hmm. I also wanted to talk about, you know, I mentioned the SEC play is coming, we're very close now. How much do you expect the success Arkansas is having? You know, the SEC, I think, has not been quite what people thought it was going to be, at least in the early going. You know, I know preseason we were talking about, we don't expect them to get the record number of teams in the tournament like we do last year, because you can't bank on that in any year, but wondering, you know, how much they could sustain that success. But how do you feel like Arkansas specifically can sustain what it's been able to do here in the non-conference once SEC play starts? Where do you feel like they're going to stack up?
Yeah, I think there's an argument to be there's a compelling argument to be made that Arkansas right now is the most complete team in the SEC, playing as well as anybody else in the SEC. You know, especially after the Duke game, you know, they, you know, really took it to Louisville and, you know, beat have beaten some really good teams, or have beaten some good teams, you know, in that stretch. You know, beat a really good Texas Tech team, beat Louisville, and, you know, have really taken care of business in their bye games as well. You know, there's a compelling argument to be made that Arkansas is the best team in the SEC right now. I think that, you know, the other teams that you would put in that category are probably Vanderbilt and Alabama. And, you know, Alabama just got kind of worked by Arizona, but Arizona is obviously ranked number one in the country. And, you know, Vanderbilt is at Memphis tonight, so it has a chance to pick up its fifth top 100 win. But, you know, it's not the same level of schedule that Arkansas has played, you know, with regard to playing against, you know, the top teams. But Vanderbilt has played a relatively competitive schedule and has really, you know, beaten the crap out of a lot of teams. So I think if you're making an argument for the top three in the SEC right now, it would have to be Arkansas, Alabama, and Vanderbilt in some order. And as for, you know, how you maintain this level of play, you know, heading into conference season, you know, I think that kind of it can be dependent on matchups. I mean, their first game is going to be against Tennessee, and Tennessee also just kind of worked Louisville last night. And that was without Mikael Brown Jr. for Louisville as well. So there's, you know, some differences there. But, you know, a lot of it is matchup dependent. You get a lot of different styles in the SEC. But, you know, I think, you know, Arkansas has, and Kenny Payne said it, you know, really imposed its will in recent games and kind of dictated how the game was going to be played and done it in different ways too, I think. I mean, last night, I mean, we saw it with so much of the offensive and defensive game plan being built around the perimeter. You know, the Texas Tech game, a lot of it was built on driving and, you know, defensively picking up full court and, you know, stop, you know, not double teaming JT Toppin in the post. So, you know, they're dictating the terms in which the games are being played and doing it in different ways, which is something I think is going to bode well for them in SEC play if they can keep playing as well as they're playing.
How much harder will that be to do against Houston this weekend? I want to get kind of your overall thoughts on what Arkansas needs to do to get a win. I mean, Houston's ranked number 8. They've had a really good start to the year. What do you feel like Arkansas needs to do to win?
I think it maybe comes down to a similar game plan to what they did against Houston or Texas Tech, excuse me, Texas schools.
The other Texas
schools. But it's, you know, because you look at Houston, you know, you got Chris Cenac in the post, you got, you know, Kingston Fleming's, you know, two of the best freshmen in the country on that team, which is kind of odd for a Kelvin Sampson team to be built around freshmen, but, you know, it's worked pretty well to this point. You know, Houston hasn't played its best basketball yet, and Kelvin Sampson's been really, you know, adamant about that, but he's also been like, I'd rather play my worst basketball in November than do it in March. So, yeah, I think if I were in charge of, you know, making the game plan, I would probably, and there's a good reason why I'm not, I would probably try to do it similar to what they did, you know, for the last 30 minutes of that Texas Tech game, you know, pressure Kingston Flemings or whoever the primary ball handler is going to be full court and, you know, don't double team Chris Cenac in the post because, you know, he's going to be a good passer and he's going to be able to, you know, kick out and find guys on the perimeter. You know, not that Houston is known for its three-point shooting, but, you know, Milos Juzan can hit those shots. And, you know, I think that is a blueprint that you could follow. I'm not sure exactly if it works the same because Houston, I think, is a better team than Texas Tech and is a deeper team right now than Texas Tech because, you know, Tech has a lot of injuries. Was missing Luke Bamgoy in that game and, you know, we only played 6 guys. Houston's not going to play only 6 guys, you wouldn't think. You know, so I think that's probably a blueprint for that. But you have to be ready for a physical game too. And that's why you play, you know, the preseason exhibition at Memphis, you play at Michigan State to get ready for games like this and, you know, games like the SEC. I mean, Houston has, you know, always been, you know, under Kelvin Sampson, a really physical team. So that's going to be, you know, an emphasis for sure.
Well, Anthony, thanks so much for joining us. Talk a little bit of basketball. I said he was on the road. He is parked. He is not actively driving down the road.
Safety first. I'm not risking my life to talk hoops as much as I
probably
would.
Honestly, I'm shocked
anyway,
by that. But I was going to say, I would have expected you to say the exact opposite. Well, thanks so much for joining us. And I hope you enjoy. I know you're going to New Jersey, aren't you, for this Houston game?
Yes, I am. I will be there. I'll get to scratch off another state off my scratch off map. It'll be my first time in New Jersey.
There you go. I've heard fun. Newark is really something.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. I've been recommended a sub shop I'm gonna attempt to get to. So I'm looking forward to that. Send all of your Newark recommendations, everybody.
Put them in the comments.
I'll be there for a couple of days. So
perfect. Well, thanks for making some time for us, and I hope you have safe travels and a great Christmas. We are taking a podcast hiatus after this week, which I'll talk a little bit more about later in the show. So Anthony won't be in studio or on the phone or in studio with us again till the new year. But you can find all of his basketball coverage at wholehogsports.com.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. Joined now in the studio by Ethan Westerman, and we're going to talk a little Razorback football and other sort of Arkansas sports news items. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass, who've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. And if you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas, looking for skilled craftsmanship, you can choose Bentonville Glass for all of your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can visit them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan, we had a little news come across the desk when you got in the studio today. A couple additional football staff hires made official. So yesterday, after we recorded the show, they made official all three coordinator hires, offense, defense, special teams. And then just now in the inbox, we got strength and conditioning coach Noah Franklin, Jeff Myers as run game coordinator and offensive line coach, and Larry Smith coaching wide receivers. All three of those guys come with Silverfield from Memphis. All three of those guys were previously reported. The one kind of news there is Jeff Myers as run game coordinator and offensive line coach, because there was another, I need to look up his exact name. There's so many names that have come across that we don't quite have faces with yet. There were two offensive line coaches reported, and I think maybe the other one is going to be more like an assistant offensive line coach, or what his exact title is going to be, we're not sure. And that's kind of what we're watching for as some of these hires go official, even though a lot of the names have been previously reported. And his name is Marcus Johnson, and he was the other offensive line coach that was reported, along with Myers. So it sounds like he'll maybe be an assistant, or what his specific title will be, we're not sure. But we were just talking before we started recording. I don't know the last time Arkansas, have they ever had someone with the title run game coordinator? Some of these titles get kind of confusing or arbitrary or whatever, but I don't remember the last time they had someone whose actual title was run game coordinator.
Yeah, and they haven't since I've been covering the team, at least.
They didn't under Pittman, I don't think.
Yeah, at least if they have, it's not been like in their official title. It was probably just understood, like that's just what you do. But yeah, no, it's a very common thing. Like you look at a lot of these head coaches across college football, and at some point they were usually, you know, like a run game coordinator or like some very specific aspect of the offense. It's a common thing, and I think that for Arkansas, this is something that you would expect from Silverfield, because I believe his first role at Memphis, he was coaching offensive line and he was the run game coordinator at Memphis, so it's something that he's done before. So it's probably something that he knows the importance of. But yeah, it seems like it's been very thematic as far as like who has been announced officially by the Razorbacks. So they announced all three coordinators yesterday, and then today they're like, let's announce all three that come from Memphis. It's like, I guess we're breaking this up and announcing it in little pockets of here's some things that go together, but dragging this one out.
Sure. It's funny, since it's like we were saying yesterday, you know, we know the names, but you know, finding out the exact details is what's to come. But a big detail we got yesterday was the contracts for the coordinators. So Matt Jones wrote this on our website, wholehogsports.com, yesterday, but the three coordinators combined will be paid $3.685 million in their first year. Ron Roberts, defensive coordinator, will be the highest paid coordinator in program history with an annual salary of $2 million through 2028. $100,000 pay raise if they win seven games next year or the year after. So this stands out to me, because at first I was like, wow, the highest paid coordinator in program history. And then you think about how paying people works, and that kind of makes sense. You know, it keeps like line go up is what happens. And also when you have a guy who's been around, a veteran guy like Ron Roberts is, that makes sense. You know, offensive coordinator Tim Kramsey will get 1.4, which Bobby Petrino was getting 1.6, so slightly less, but that does kind of make sense. Bobby Petrino is a guy that has been around the block, has had coaching experience. You were going to pay him more. He'd been on staff a little bit too, for a little while too. you're going to be paying him more than you would be paying the coach that you're bringing from Memphis. So I think at first I was like, oh, wow, this is that new financial commitment that we've all been talking about. And I don't think this isn't nothing, but I hesitate to be like, oh, wow, look at this commitment they're making, when it's kind of just how it works. And when we aren't totally sure what some of these other new staffs are going to be paying. I did a bunch of research today trying to find other newly hired coaches, what they are paying their staff. So new defense coordinators, new offense coordinators, what are they being paid? And it was difficult to find any contract reporting yet. And I think part of that is some of the contracts aren't final, or they're not being distributed through FOIA requests yet. We were really fortunate that we got those FOIA requests back. Matt got them yesterday when those hires were announced. So we have those numbers already. Others don't. So you'd be comparing them against guys whose contracts were signed maybe a couple years ago. So I'll be interested, and I'm going to keep looking as some of these hires get announced or as some of these contracts come out, to see where these guys kind of stack up among other new coaches. Because I think that'll be more telling about – because one of Hunter Yurcheck's stated goals was we want to be near the top – we want to be closer to the top of the SEC, the top half of the SEC, which is not where they've been before.
Yeah, which is crazy to me, because you think about this. Every program that's going through a coaching change right now, like, there has to be, just with the nature of college athletics, like, one of the big things that every staff is asking is what's the finances going to be like. And so you feel like every program is, like, trying to up its financial game. So it makes you curious, you know, whenever Hunter Yurcheck says that they'll be in the top half of the SEC, like, if those are, like, forecasted numbers, if this is, you know, as things stand right now, what with this commitment we'd be that. Is it taking into account that, you know, these other programs will probably raise their, you know, how much they invest in the program by X percent? Like, it's just so much of this is, you know, numbers that will never see us. But, you know, we come back to this over and over. The proof will be in the transfer portal, mm-hmm. how much that investment is. And, you know, you look at these salaries and that they're paying these coordinators, and it is obviously a pretty substantial increase. Yeah, like
9.5%.
So that's not nothing, for sure. And then also, I think if you know, maybe read between the lines a little bit, just as far as how many staff members have been reported so far, it seems like there might be you might have more positions on the staff this year too, even if those are in not, you know, your normal, like, on-field assistant roles, just in other roles. And I think that I brought this up yesterday, speaking on the radio. I feel like also a side of this that maybe people don't think about whenever you have a bigger staff with these people who you don't really know their name and, like, what makes them exciting. A lot of these people could just be great relationship people. And I don't think that there's a price tag, like, in the portal right now that you can put on that whenever you have a coach. Like, I think that's why Travis Williams, like, Texas A&M is going to hire him, because at bare minimum, he is a good relationship guy and he can talk to guys in the portal and recruit. I think that the more people you add on your staff in today's kind of climate of college sports, like you might look at this and be like, oh, he was doing this at Jacksonville State. He was at, you know, Cincinnati. Like, but you're covering a lot of different areas of people who know players and know people, and you never know when those relationships are what helps you get a better transfer portal class, because these are people that players like. And so I'm just curious, you know, whenever this all sorts out, how many of these people who are being reported are really going to be like that, you know, on the field, like, we just trust their resume and they're great at coaching offensive line, and how many of these are like, you know what, they're a person who players love, a player's coach, and they're going to help out with our recruiting efforts. But there's a lot to sort out here, because they've had a lot of names thrown at us.
Yeah, there's been so much reported. But to your point about the relationship thing, you want both. You want somebody that's going to be great on, you know, as an on-field coach and is going to develop players. But that acquisition and those relationships is really important. I mean, Ryan Silverfield has been leaning on relationships he has with Arkansas's current roster from recruiting them when they were in high school, trying to recruit them to Memphis. And he's been kind of leaning on that to say, hey, you know what I'm about. Why don't you stay at Arkansas with me? And then they now have this financial backing to back that up and say, stay with me because you like me, and also here's what's in it for you too. And that's the new kind of marriage that you have to have. And so if you can get assistants that can, you know, pitch to you, hey, I am a good on-field coach. I'm going to help you develop. I'm going to help you get where you need to go. Also, guys that know each other, you have that relationship, you have that foundation. It goes a long way. Stuff like that does still matter. It doesn't matter in the same way that I think people thought of it mattering pre-transfer portal, pre-NIL, but I don't think it isn't important anymore. It's just a different thing. And I think we're just kind of, we're going to continue to see how that changes over the next few years. I don't think it just totally doesn't matter, but it matters differently.
And I mean, you heard, it was at our Hogs Illustrated luncheon, Bruiser Flint came, he's the special assistant to John Calipari. Like, any coach will be the first to say, like, I think my question to him was like, what's made like this be so successful over and over? He's like, we get good players. Like it's not that like complicated. Like we can really recruit and we get good players. Like every staff goes as far as the players that they recruit. And so it's like, yeah, you need really good coaches. I think everybody is excited to see, you know, maybe what the new strength coach can do. Can you get them to where they're really competing in the fourth quarter harder, not turning the ball over? I'm really excited to see, you know, what the defensive line coach does. Are we going to get a lot of sacks? But like, you also can't put a price tag on just like in today's climate of like, oh wow, you're a good coach, but you're also just an excellent recruiter. It's just, it comes at a premium right now.
Speaking of recruiting and the transfer portal, there's been a lot of headlines the last couple of days about quarterbacks in particular that are intending to enter the portal when it opens in January. Some of the guys that I jotted down that are notable: Dylan Raiola from Nebraska, Drew Mestemaker from North Texas, and how it's not a guarantee that he's going to follow his coach to Oklahoma State. Sam Levitt from Arizona State, Brendan Sorsby from Cincinnati, DJ Langway from Florida was a huge one the other day. I am not at all proposing that Arkansas go after one of the big transfer portal names, because I don't think that that's necessary. But I started talking to my fiance the other day about, you know, should Arkansas be trying, is Arkansas or should they look for an additional quarterback in the portal to kind of compete with KJ Jackson? Or do you just say, this is our guy, let's just ride with KJ, we'll fill in some depth if we need it? What do you make of that? And again, I'm not saying they need to go after like the top, you know, they don't need to go get DJ Lagway. Yeah. I'm not saying that. But do you want to get somebody else who could, you would feel okay about, you know, who can come in and legitimately compete? Do you feel like, you know, they've got Trevor Jackson on the roster, the transfer they got in this past year, who Sam Pittman at the time was like, he can compete with KJ. Does Ryan Silver feel that way? I don't know. Is Trevor Jackson intending to stay? I also don't know. But do you feel like they should have somebody who can come in and actually compete, not just like a body to have in the quarterback room?
I certainly do. Personally, I like KJ Jackson. I think he's got a really high upside. I think he'll be the starter. I think that he'll win the job and he'll be the starter. But I think that, I mean, if there's anything you've learned from college football, you go as your quarterback goes a lot of the time. And it's just something you can't risk. I mean, let's say... We'll go two sides of this. I mean, KJ Jackson, let's say he just doesn't play how you expect, and you've got a problem at quarterback, even though you don't see that coming and you have faith in him. If that happens, you really want, I mean, the room that you have right now, are you that confident in them? They don't have really starting experience or even backup experience. Mm-hmm. Like, they've been third stringer or below. I think that you really cannot mess it up. Like, you need, in my opinion, if I'm in this situation, I'm wanting to put all the confidence in the world in KJ Jackson. Like, this is your job basically to lose. Like, we have faith in you. But I would personally probably go out and get somebody with starting experience that either maybe lost a job at a school, but they have that experience and they aren't going to be, you know, terrified to go in there if it's their time, which I'm not saying that I think, you know, these third stringers at Arkansas would be just terrified. But
it matters. I mean, experience does matter.
It matters that you're ready for the moment. Or I might would even, you know, it's funny because you think about how this can all work out. Like, Tennessee had no clue that Joey Aguilar would be its quarterback, like, this time last year. They got him late in the spring. And obviously, he
did
some.
Ole Miss didn't think Trinidad Chambliss was going to be a quarterback, and it's in the college football playoff because of him.
Exactly. It's like things. There are good quarterbacks out there that maybe haven't gotten their chance yet, and I think you can probably find one of those that like you are confident in. Like, if we need to turn to you, like, we have faith you can do some stuff. I don't think that you really want to go out and recruit a quarterback that like. I'm not sure Arkansas really wants a huge quarterback battle per se, to where it's like that's the storyline. Is it going to be KJ Jackson or person X or whatever? I think that you want to get somebody that you know that KJ Jackson, like, we want to roll with you, but if we have to turn to him, like, he's going to still be able to push you and honestly kind of like what KJ Jackson was to Taylen Green, but in the sense that maybe you need somebody more established than KJ Jackson. Because, I mean, you just kind of went off the hope that KJ Jackson would develop and be who we saw him be able to be in a few games. But I don't know, like, if you want to take that risk with KJ Jackson, if you're going to kind of give him the faith to be your star. I think you want somebody who, you know, like, you can rely on some game film that maybe it was at the Sun Belt level or some lower level, but you've seen them start some games and you know what they can do.
Yeah, I was going to say, what kind of profile are we talking about? Because do you think you need somebody who's maybe been a backup before who had to come in and has experience coming in as a backup and doing okay? Or do you want somebody who's been a starter or at a lower level? Or what kind of profile do you think you're looking for?
I think it just depends. I think that a starter at a lower level who wasn't, you know, that, I mean, if they were a starter and bad at a lower level, like, certainly I don't think that's who you want to come in and be your backup if push comes to shove, that KJ Jackson, you know, or, you know, misses some time. Injuries happen in college football. Like, you want somebody who you know a little bit of what they can do. I would say if you're going to – I think ideally, like, somebody with starting experience maybe on a lower level. But, like, worst-case scenario, I don't think it's the worst thing if you get somebody who maybe was the starter at one point at this Big 10 school or starter at one point at an SEC school and they just lost their job to somebody but they have starting experience because this other person came in and was just better than them. I think it just needs to be somebody that, like – things won't absolutely fall apart under them.
It's a challenge because how do you get that person who's been a starter at whatever level to come to you when you have kind of you've endorsed this guy as your quarterback? How do you sell that to both sides? How do you sell it to the person you're recruiting and say, we want you to come in and push this other guy? You know, you probably don't tell him you're not counting on him to start, but he can maybe read that in the tea leaves. And then how do you tell KJ Jackson, hey, we're confident in you, but we're also going to bring in somebody to push you and who can be a good option in case you don't work out? Or, you know, maybe you sell it as in case you get hurt, whatever. That's the hard part. We talk about relationships. That's the hard part.
And I think the tricky part of this one, too, is the age of KJ Jackson. He's a younger guy. Let's say he was going into his senior year and now it's his time and you're getting somebody who they have another year or two after this. You can sell it to him like, oh, well, prove yourself this year behind him, and then look, you have another year here. Like, it's just a different situation with KJ Jackson because he's a young guy that if you're an Arkansas fan, you hope that, honestly, he kind of follows the same mold that maybe like a KJ Jefferson did, as far as like he was a younger guy who, you know, once it became his time, he started for Arkansas multiple years. I think that's what Arkansas fans want to see is KJ Jackson, or, I mean, ideally be your starting quarterback for the next few years. And it certainly seems like, you know, to have him come in the press conference and announce that he's coming back, like, that's a sign. Like,
I don't think you're going to do that for, like, your backup quarterback.
Exactly. Like, I don't think you do that with somebody that you're not that confident in coming in and being a big part of what you do. Like, it seemed like the message that was with him and Quincy Rose was like, hey, look, we have our anchors on offense and defense that are in this room right now saying they're back. So it would shock me if they went and got somebody. I don't want to say shock, actually, but it would surprise me if they got somebody to come in and they really wanted a quarterback battle. But I do think that you need somebody who, and this isn't a knock against Trevor Jackson or Grayson Wilson, but I do think you want somebody who is maybe has that starting experience that they don't have, and maybe you let those two guys really battle it out for scout team quarterback, or I mean, at least give them a shot maybe to win the backup role.
Yeah, maybe there's something that they'll see in them, you know, over the course of, you know, the next couple months that they'll think that they are more capable as a backup, that they would feel okay about them, you know. I mean, KJ Jackson wasn't experienced and he was a capable backup this year, so that's the hard part too. I remember feeling this, you know, this is the case in every job field, right? It's people want me to have experience in order to hire me, but how do I get experience if nobody will hire me? And so that's one of the things now with the portal that everybody's kind of worried about. But it's interesting to kind of track that. And I think there's a lot of ways they could approach it. I also, something interesting that's been happening this year, and I think I saw this some last year, but I'm definitely seeing it more this year, is the announcement of players returning with like photos of them signing a contract, the way that you do with like coaches. I am so interested in this being a trend. Like, Arkansas is doing it. They have this front office account that's relatively new. I know it's on Instagram. I don't know if it's also on Twitter, but I've followed it on Instagram. And it's, you know, Caden Kittler signing his contract. KJ Jackson signing his contract.
They posted Quincy today, yes. So I guess he's got it written.
Yes. So it's interesting to see that trend. I think Miami maybe has been doing it. I've seen a few different schools now do it. And I've seen some people have, like, very strong reactions to how much they don't like that. And I'm like, I don't care that much about the actual, like, posting of the photos. It's just interesting because it's just not something we really see. You see it with high school players signing their letters of intent, but you don't usually see it with the signing of contracts. So it's a new thing for sure. But Arkansas's got several guys now committed to coming back. A couple of younger guys, too. I know Blake Cherry posted that he was going to be coming back. And then was it Keandre Johnson? a few weeks ago.
We had a Cash Courtney yesterday,
Cash
too,
Courtney.
Which is
oh,
one that...
that's who I'm thinking of, not Blake Cherry.
Okay.
Did they both?
Yeah, there's a lot of freshman linemen.
I've mixed those two specifically up so many times this year. But it was Cash Courtney, you're right.
He's one that has a one game of starting experience, right?
Mm-hmm, I believe so.
So it was that Mississippi State game. So it's like you got some guys that are younger that you're like... You know, you're wanting to stick it around and see if you can develop with a new staff. But it is interesting to see this account because they're posting everybody who signs. And it reminds me of, like, NFL teams will post a lot of times, like, the players signing their extension or whatever. And it's like, it feels very much like they're trying to resemble that. Like, because, I mean, everything with college sports is trying to get more professionalized. But, like, this account, it's just funny because it just came out of nowhere. And it's kind of like... The news of whenever it's official is when you see the post on the account. But yeah, a lot of guys returning.
I've been trying to run through kind of in my head or looking at the roster from this year, some other guys who haven't played that much yet or at all, but who have potential that you maybe want to see them keep, or, you know, I at least would speculate they might want to keep, you know. Last fall, it was all aboard the Antonio Jordan hype train. Yeah. And then he had an injury early. He didn't get in that much, but, you know, he was a true freshman. Idea that maybe he, you know, could have something. Is that a guy you really want to endeavor to keep? You know, I've been trying to think of some other. Is there anybody that comes to mind off the top of your head that's either younger or just hasn't gotten to see that much that you feel like has potential that you want to keep?
I almost feel like that entire just freshman O line.
Like
the O line was the way that Eric Mateos talked about them sold me. Mm-hmm. It was like, and it wasn't just him. It was the way that these older. Experienced linemen we're talking to, they're like, these guys can be really good. I think you keeping those guys is big, which obviously, you know, you had Shaq McCroy, who I guess he was redshirt freshman, but I'm talking about the true freshman that they had. You know, you have Cash Courtney say he's coming back. That's a good start. Blake Cherry would be another one. Prudhomme, mm-hmm. Lionel Prudhomme. I think that all those guys would be good.
Especially offensive line. Arkansas got in a position where it was having to plug its offensive line through the portal all the time, and sometimes that works for teams, but a lot of times it's more of a development game. So offensive line particularly, you want to make sure that you have at least a couple guys that you're developing and who are homegrown.
Yeah, and I think it's really good for them that they have those guys that they have a lot of confidence in, and that you got Caden Kittler to say he's coming back. Like, because it's a scary thing, I think, if you're transitioning how your line looks to, like, all of a sudden just go to young guys, but it's like they've had some older guys with, like, and I know Kobe Branham's not, like, a upperclassman or anything, or does that even exist anymore? I don't even know, like, underclassmen, upperclassmen.
We're finally getting out of the COVID eligibility, so it's eligibility itself is a little more clear now.
But it's a guy, guys with starting experience
who
said they're coming
back.
Yeah, and so I think that really helps whenever you're making that transition with younger guys, especially on, like, on the O-line where it's such a, you know, needs to be a connected unit. That helps. Other freshmen that I think would be important maybe to keep around, I think Antonio Jordan, still you like the upside, and he has all the physical gifts. It's just a matter of, is he going to be college football ready? I think, you know, I just mentioned him a little bit ago, but I mean, Grayson Wilson was highly recruited out of high school, and I think he was a 4-star by pretty much everybody, and I think the talent is there, and he's maybe something that you'd want to see if you can develop him the same way that, you know, KJ Jackson has developed. Obviously, you know, I think a different just player profile, but it's somebody who is, like, at least you know that the potential's there. Tavion Wallace, the linebacker, would have been one that I would have liked to see, but he's going in the portal. He already announced that. It wouldn't shock me if he followed Travis Williams to A&M because that's his guy. But, I mean, there's pieces all over the lineup that I think that you look at and you say, there's potential. I mean, the freshman D linemen, Otis and Bell. Mm-hmm. I think that both of those are guys that you look at. There's another one too. I feel bad. I'm blank on them. There's three of those freshman D linemen who are really good. I say really good. They have a lot of potential.
Yeah.
So I think there's pieces across the board.
I want to give you a quick women's basketball corner because they're playing UMKC later today. SEC play is coming up. What do you feel like you've seen from this team that maybe you're worried about come SEC play, or that you feel good about come SEC play? What do they kind of need to do over these next couple games?
SEC play is just so tricky because everybody's so good. It's like they
and
can
the
be
top
doing
is
some...
so much better. Like even the jump from the top to the middle is different. Like,
yeah,
you know,
like there's about 7 or 8 teams in the SEC right now that I just look at paper and I say they are, like, if they somehow did not lose to one of these, like, it would be incredible because the talent gap is so big that you're like, you almost look at it and say that is a for sure loss, because in women's basketball, like, the top is really good. And then the bottom, there's a bottom to middle, honestly, like, it can really shake up a lot. I think that I look at them and they are going to be, whenever they touch the floor, like, most of the time, the lesser athletic team. They're going to be the lesser. I mean, the other teams will have a lot more 4 stars, 5 stars on the court, but they've just got to play better as a unit connected. I think that they've made improvements throughout their season. They've had a few setbacks. Like the game at SMU was just a disappointing one for them. They played bad. They should have beaten that team. They're better than them. I mean, they just didn't bring their game. And then against Harvard, they got smoked, and it was because they also didn't bring it. It's like this team, whenever they're connected and they're playing hard and well, I mean, they could beat some teams in the SEC, but I don't really know what to expect, because there's about 5 teams at the bottom that I could see them, you know, could beat them. But then all those teams also look at Arkansas and say we should beat them. So it's just how it works. But they've had a pretty good non-conference, I'd say, to be 9-3 at this point. They're 1 win away from matching their win total from last year, which is kind of just
That's
crazy
insane.
To think about. Because it doesn't feel like they've just been, like, unstoppable this year or anything. It's just they had that bad of a year last year. But I think that they'll exceed that win total before they even get into SEC play. But they've got a tough road ahead just because of what the SEC is. I think a good first year for Kelsey Music in SEC play would honestly, if they were to get three or four wins, like, I'd say you did a pretty good job considering what you faced.
I also want to mention real quick the Bowerman Award, which is often called the Heisman Trophy of track and field, will be awarded tomorrow night, Thursday night, and Arkansas's Jordan Anthony is up for that. That's Jordan Anthony, who used to be on the football team. He was a wide receiver before he decided to focus full-time on track, and he won national titles. He had a fantastic season. I think he has, you know, he's one of 3 finalists, and I think he definitely has a really good shot of winning this thing. He would be Arkansas's 3rd Bowerman winner. It's a huge deal. He'd be the first football player ever to win it, and Arkansas would be the first school to have 3 Bowerman winners. Matt Jones has a really good story on our website today about him and the season he had and his hopes for this award. He talked to Doug Case, the new head coach, who used to just coach mostly sprints and has worked with Jordan in his time at Arkansas. He's got a good story about them and that process. But be on the lookout on Thursday night for the award, because that would be in a huge year for individual accomplishments for Arkansas athletes, between Bree Ellis, Fahiva Aloy, Maria Jose Marin, the golfer, and now potentially Jordan Anthony being players of the year in their sports. It's a huge season, you know, a huge year for Arkansas athletes, and it could be another big one for him. So be sure to keep a lookout for that on wholehogsports.com. Tomorrow we'll have a little bit different show. We have another Q&A at one of our luncheons with Scotty Thurman that Matt will be doing there, and then we'll be back on Friday before we go on a little bit of a holiday break. So join us again tomorrow to hear from Scotty Thurman, and again on Friday to talk a little bit more news.